Hi, I'm John Rawling, welcoming you to Ringside Rewind, where I'm joined by Tris Dixon and Ian Dark. And we're grateful for sponsorship from Fleet UK, a car and commercial vehicle leasing company based in Hampshire, supporting our programme. Great people who've supplied customers for 20 years or more, including me. Wherever you are, they'll find and supply any car you want and work out financing options to best suit your needs. Fleet UK pride themselves on transparency, trust and fairness in every deal. And you can take it from me, they are brilliant at what they do. Just have a look and check them out at fleetuk.com.
Hello and welcome back to Ringside Rewind with Ian Dark, John Rawling and myself, Tris Dixon. We are gathered here today to talk about this Saudi super fight on Saturday. There you go for alliteration. Saudi super fight on Saturday. And it's between Tyson Fury, the WBC heavyweight champion, and Alexander Usyk, who holds the rest of the belts that he won with impressive performances times two over Anthony Joshua. Usyk is a former cruiserweight champion, unified cruiserweight champion, who has moved up to claim his share of the heavyweight championship belt. And it is the first time, gents, that we will have had an undisputed heavyweight champion since those heady days when Lennox Lewis finally got the better of Evander Holyfield in their second fight. Gents, does it feel as historic as that quarter of a century ago when you guys were relatively fresh and on the scene? Ian, let's kick it over to you.
Well, I think in the modern era, it is a much anticipated, eagerly anticipated fight, isn't it? Between Tyson Fury, who for a long time, let's be honest about this, didn't look as if he really fancied this particular job against Alexander Usyk. And why? Has he ever fought anybody with Usyk's skill? Usyk is the smaller man, naturally, but he's been around the heavyweight division for a while now. His mentality is always very, very strong. So I do find it fascinating, although you've got to say Tyson Fury has always found the answers so far in his career, even when he's been down on the floor, as he was so spectacularly against Wilder.
John, what's your pre-prediction take on it? And what kind of fight can we expect on Saturday night?
I think it's going to be a very technical fight, Triz. I don't think it's going to be a real barn burner in the style of a Deontay Wilder fight. I don't think it's going to be thrills and spills and huge punches. I think it's going to be technical. And I think the question's going to be whether or not Tyson Fury can actually work with that skill set that Usyk will definitely bring to the fight. Usyk, by that, I go along with what Ian said. I think by a distance, he's technically the best fighter that Fury has faced. And the big question, I think, is whether or not Fury's skill set is going to be up to the job. So far as the actual fight's concerned, when we're looking ahead, I have to say, as we're talking here a little while before the fight, I've been a little bit underwhelmed by the advanced pre-fight publicity. I don't get the sense of excitement that there was maybe for those huge fights involving Lennox and Evander Holyfield all that time ago.
Ian, I mean, why do you think that is? People have said to me, and it's always a relatively good gauge, isn't it, when your non-boxing friends pick your brains about a fight. But people have said to me very vaguely, oh, is Fury doing something this weekend? It's not really one of those ones where, you know, in the barber shops or, you know, in Uber drivers or whatever, people are leaning over to you and say, oh, what do you think about this? Like, it just doesn't, I don't know. I don't want to knock the fact that we've got this undisputed title fight, which I'm really looking forward to. And I think, as John says, it's going to be a very high class boxing fight. But there's something that has not lit the touch paper this week that even John Fury couldn't manage to do with his flagrant headbutt yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, and the reason is the fight is in Saudi Arabia. The events in Saudi Arabia, although they're awash with money, have been soulless so far. And it all feels a long, long way away. Okay, you could argue that the thriller in Manila was a long way away and the rumble in the jungle, but that was a different era, different times, and it was Muhammad Ali. I think that's what it is, really. You'd expect the newspapers to be have page leads in the sports pages every day on the build-up to this fight, but it hasn't really been that way, has it? And I do think it's, you know, if the fight had been at Wembley or the O2 Arena or Las Vegas, there would have been a different buzz. So, you know, that's something that boxing has to look very, very carefully at. I'm sure the fighters and I'm sure people like Frank Warren are in love with Saudi Arabia because it means dollar signs flashing in front of them. But there is a price to pay, I think, in terms of the feel, the mood, and how much it sets the world alight.
Yeah, you wonder that, John. Had it been at Wembley? Because I think, you know, I'm trying to think, and I know it's not that far back, but even it felt like Dillian White wasn't doing any media, but it felt like Fury Dillian White was arguably bigger in the papers over here than Fury Usyk now.
I agree with that, yeah. I think there's I think there's a little bit of fatigue among fans that it's taken so long for this fight finally to come together. So I think that's something that plays against it. And I think there was when this was made, when Fury got injured back in February, and they said, oh, it's going to take place in May, there was a significant degree of skepticism, wasn't there, about whether or not it would actually go ahead. And yeah, I think, you know, okay, it's easy to be critical of sport going over to Saudi, to sport going over to the Middle East, the whole sports washing story, which I guess is another thing, but it lurks in the background against the promotion. And I don't think that the fight could have happened at Wembley. I may be wrong, but it seems as though it was never going to happen on British soil. But I think there's no question that had it been here, or even in America, you know, had they put it on in Vegas, but certainly if it had been at Wembley, it would have been massive. And it doesn't have that sort of real crackle of anticipation that a truly huge fight has. There's still time, I suppose, for it to advance in the days from where we're speaking now up to fight date on Saturday night, but it's got a long way to go.
Yeah, so I think that's fair. It's worth acknowledging that we're doing this on the Tuesday of fight week, and the grand arrivals are tonight. That's a press conference is still to come, and of course the weigh-in. So there's a lot to be written. But going back, and I know that we're condemned possibly as the old guard, but going back to what we were talking about, there wasn't a line in the Sunday Times about the fight at all this week.
Yeah, I noticed that. I get the Sunday Times Sport because it's usually a very good read, and there are some in-depth pieces on all manner of sports. And I was fully expecting to read a double-page spread about Fury and Usyk. That would have been the norm for a fight like this in days gone by, but I couldn't find a line about it. So maybe there wasn't room. I mean, we are talking here, aren't we, about a line that, you know, goes through Jack Dempsey and Joe Lewis, Rocky Marciano, Sonny Liston, Ali, Frazier, Foreman, Tyson, Douglas, Holyfield, Bo, Lewis. You know, so it's a big, big fight, all right. But as we've been saying, it just doesn't feel like it at the moment. I think it will feel like it come Saturday night, and when we look back on it, there'll be an awful lot of stuff, I think, after the fight when there's something to say. But preview wise, it's been, as you said, the blue touch paper has not quite been lit.
Yeah, I wonder if John's right when he talks about the fatigue, and obviously, you know, Usyk's team have been very strong on saying that you know, they don't think Fury's going to show up. You know, until very recently, there's been the lines going out from the Usyk team that Fury's not going to make it to the dance at all. So I'm not saying that's happened this week. And obviously Fury is out there now and, you know, things are underway, but you know, it's been a very regular line from the Usyk camp. So maybe it's fatigue and doubt combined. But I don't want to be too negative. I think it's really important we point out the stuff like sports washing, and there's been the stuff in the Guardian this week by Don McRae and Lewis Watson, which is well worth anyone's time to read. But in terms of the fight and the sporting element of it, John, are these two guys that are at their best, or do you think that maybe Fury's best was in that trilogy with Deontay Wilder, and maybe we have an incomplete Fury left as a consequence?
Well, that's one of the fascinating things about the fight, isn't it, Triz? Because, you know, I'm a big believer in, when you assess a fight, of go with the evidence of your eyes. And the three performances that Tyson Fury's produced since those epic fights against Deontay Wilder have been less than impressive. You know, I mean, Derek Chisora, with the best will in the world, and brave though he is, he provided no real test whatsoever to Tyson Fury. Dillian White was beaten with conspicuous ease, as I think he was always going to be. And then Francis Ngannou really embarrassed Fury. So on the basis of those three fights, and okay, he clearly didn't train, did he, for the fights against Ngannou. He wasn't up for it. But that apart, his performances have been a long way back from where he was against Deontay Wilder, in my opinion. And I think on the basis of that, there's a very significant argument that Tyson Fury may be past his best. Okay, he's got himself into shape. He's got himself looking at least physically fit. But there have been examples of that in the past, haven't there? Muhammad Ali did that against Larry Holmes, and we all know what happened there. I know that Tyson Fury is not going to be embarrassed to that extent, at least I don't think he is. But there is an argument that he could be past his best as a fighter. And if so, Usyk, two good wins against Anthony Joshua, plus the Daniel Dubois fight. You know, at 37, he's a guy who lives the life, isn't he? And he's a proud, proud man who is very conscious of the fact he's doing it for his country.
Yeah, it's interesting. But then, Ian, I suppose you have to weigh in. When you look at Usyk, might not have the numbers on the board in terms of as a pro, but he had hundreds and hundreds of amateur fights. And that is mileage in its own right, you know, to damage and everything else. But it's a very tough one to read, isn't it? Because, you know, the Ngannou fight with Fury might have thrown us all off the scent. Because I think heading into that, Fury was recognized as the world number one and maybe by a margin, the best in the world. And now I think the Ngannou fight's left us with far more questions in the build-up. And by the way, I spoke to Teddy Atlas yesterday and had an interesting conversation with him. And he actually, in terms of John, I think you mentioned the rumble in the jungle there. He actually likened the delay and the postponement here to the rumble in the jungle. Remember when Foreman was cut and couldn't leave Zaire? He thinks that the delay might benefit one of the fighters, and he's not sure which one. He sort of said it might benefit Fury more because Usyk was very geared up the first time around, and it's given Fury a bit more time to buy his time and rebound, really, from what happened against Ngannou. I'm not sure what your stance is on that, Ian.
Well, Frank Warren was saying the other day that he thinks the delay has helped his man, Tyson Fury. He's just given him that little bit more time to get himself physically right. And he says, importantly, he's mentally right as well. But of course, the camp are always going to say that. I mean, it's one of the great cliches of boxing about fighters being in the shape of their life. And then afterwards, when they've lost, they say they had flu in the build-up. So we take all of that, I think, with a little bit of a pinch of salt. Yeah, you're right about Usyk. Your world and Olympic gold as an amateur, just like John said, he's lived the life. And I think this is the stage of a fighter's career where he really gets the payoff for having lived the life. Late 30s now, but this guy is fighting as a torchbearer for his, you know, war-torn nation. He's a very proud fighter. He's got a great skill set. I think what he can't do technically in the fight is he can't let Tyson Fury get in the center of the ring and keep him on the end of that jab. But I think he's good enough to find ways of getting in the pocket and landing hooks inside. And maybe just his sheer work rate in the fight and his professionalism and his ability to negate what Fury has got, even though he's the bigger man, I could see him causing the upset in this fight, if I'm honest with you. That's not a logical pick. The logical pick is the good big un beats the good little un, et cetera, et cetera. But I think Usyk just might be something else.
He's got great footwork, hasn't he? He's got great footwork and he's got some terrific lateral movement. And he beat Joshua very handily twice. You know, I mean, the first fight particularly, he won it pretty clearly. And it's easy for people to knock AJ. And I'm sure, you know, Tyson Fury and Frank Warren have been very keen in the past to do that, though I think they'll be changing their tune at some stage in the future because they'll be trying to build it up as another super fight. But he was terrific in those contests, Usyk. And did he quite get the credit that he deserved? Was there a lot of criticism about Joshua? Did that deflect from what were really two outstanding performances from Usyk? And on the basis of those performances, I think when you measure it against what Fury's done post-Wilder, you know, there are some big questions there about Big Tyson.
Yeah, hey. I mean, Usyk's a great judge of angles and distance, you know, the technicalities of boxing. He knows the business back to front. I mean, we're talking him up here. I don't think we should pour too much scorn in Fury's direction. I'm prepared to give him a pass on the Ngannou fight, really. I don't think he was mentally there for that fight, and he's in a much better place. Well, I assume he's in a much better place because he knows how good Usyk is, which is one of the reasons why he didn't seem in a particular hurry to get in the ring with him. But now, with the money being as big as it is and the pressure being on, that is what's happening. So I think this, we are going to see probably something like the best of Fury, the kind of Fury, the way he got ready for the Vladimir Klitschko fight, for the Wilder fights. He is the younger man still. He is bigger. I mean, he's got a lot going for him. And speed-wise, he's a very fast heavyweight for a guy of 6'9". He's a bear of a man, isn't he? But he's got quick hands, and I think he's got a quick boxing brain as well. So it's not like Usyk is just a master craftsman who's going to completely outwit him and outfox him and bemuse him, all those things. I don't see that. But I think this is a fight between two skillsters, and I've been very, very impressed with everything I've seen from Usyk so far, even though the Dubois fight, you know, with the low blow controversy and all that kind of thing, you know, there was a little bit of, he got a bit of a mild reaction, didn't he, to that fight. But he's very, very good. I mean, it is a fascinating fight.
The Dubois fight, I mean, he won every round of that fight fairly clearly. The only discussion really about that fight is about the low blow. You know, the rest of the fight, I thought Usyk was completely the better man.
By the way, Ian, you said there about Fury being the younger man, which is correct. But I actually alluded to Usyk, you know, in his hundreds of amateur fights, actually having perhaps a bigger ring age. But also, we have touched upon it already, but Usyk has lived the life. And there will come a point where, basically, as a huge 7-foot giant, you know, who's physically big, you know, from top to bottom, Fury is not going to get any better at a certain age because the dimensions just don't allow it. Huge men are not successful in sport at beyond a certain point. Also, it's worth taking into account when you say Usyk has lived the life. You know, it was only a few years ago where Tyson was 30 stone. And we know the damage Ricky Hatton did on his career, ballooning up in between fights. At some point, Fury might pay a price for his past sins. Agree?
Definitely. I mean, that's a very valid point. You know, I mean, as we all know, Ricky shortened his career by a decade from what it could have been as a result of, you know, what he was doing away from the ring. And I think Tyson Fury was doing at least as much as Ricky Hatton was doing and some. He was just vast at one stage and was clearly out of control. And okay, he's come back, and that's one of the great sporting stories, isn't it? It's one of the great comebacks of all time, I think, what Tyson Fury has done. But yeah, it's got to have taken a toll on him. It has to have done.
Yeah, and it has to be said as well. I think that, you know, I said maybe that Tyson Fury gets a pass for Ngannou because it was a kind of build up as a circus fight, and Ngannou was a little bit better. But Ngannou didn't exactly advertise the form, did he, against AJ?
No, exactly. Hey, and by the way, you know, I know we started talking about Lennox and Evander. I do want to talk about that a little bit more. What price the draw on Saturday? You know, Lennox and Evander had that very controversial draw in, I think, New York, the first one before the rematch in Vegas. There's a rematch clause already attached to Fury Usyk. When you talk about the fights, you can see, you know, Fury maybe landing some pot shots and maybe the cleaner shots, but Usyk with the volume and working in close. You know, neither of them have been stopped as pros. You could see it going the distance. And then we've got a controversy on our hands, which we don't need. But, I mean, in terms of what price to draw, it's 14 to 1. And as far as draws go in boxing, they're usually around 20 or 25 to 1. So it's, you know, it doesn't seem as far-fetched right now, does it, in terms of history repeating itself, John?
I think it's a good call, you know. And there are going to be cynics out there who will say that it's in the interests of the rematch for the Saudi big hitters, for the television companies who are involved, and also for the promoters involved, for it to be a draw. You know, cynics are going to say that's a very, very credible outcome. And I think that thought is why the draw price in the market is very much shorter than you might have expected.
Yeah, very, very short. Of course, we're not cynics, are we?
No, absolutely not.
Well, the thing is, we would be less cynical had we not seen it all before and seen it in 1999 when it first happened.
Well, that was outrageous. I mean, we've talked about that in other editions of this podcast, but what happened there was just crazy. It was no draw. Lennox Lewis won, but, you know, justice was done in the return, even if that was a closer fight.
But also, it's fine to talk about the controversy, but legitimately, this could be a very, very close fight, couldn't it? It could be, you know, 115, 113, 114, 114. It could be very, very tough to split them by the end of it, couldn't it?
It could be very, very tight indeed. And yeah, you could see it going to a split decision, as you say, maybe even a draw. I think that would be very unsatisfactory. I think they've kind of got to find a winner, haven't they, of the fight. I don't like it when they call a draw, even though it's tight and we might want to see it again. But they've got the rematch clause anyway, haven't they? So even if it's vaguely close, I think they're going to do it all over again, probably, unless they get Fury and Joshua on, and because the market demands it. But yeah, I can see it being tight, and I can see it coming down to an argument about what you like most watching the two fighters' strategies.
Ian, yes. Just while you're talking there about it being close and about, you know, we've already said we think it could be a very technical fight. It's fascinating from that point of view. But I can very easily foresee this not being a particularly appealing fight to watch. I can see this not being, you know, I mean, I'm not being cynical here. I'm just assessing two fighters and their styles and how this one might pan out. And it may be that if it, you know, even if it's close, if people watch it and think, well, you know, what was all that about? Then it suddenly makes an AJ fight a very appealing alternative. And quite clearly, if it's not a good first fight, despite the fact that there's the rematch clause, an AJ fight could be bigger.
You could see a situation in this fight where it could get ugly and messy with Fury using his extra size. Maybe, you know, what is he going to be? 50, 60 pounds heavier? I don't know. We'll see at the weigh-in. With him grabbing hold of Usyk when they work close and trying to push him away, that kind of stop him working effectively on the inside. So there might be a lot of that. So the referee is going to be important here, isn't he, too?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's an important job. In terms of that, I think it's interesting because obviously people are talking about Usyk having the volume, and obviously Fury's going to need to slow him down in some way, shape or form. And it was another thing that Teddy Atlas said. I said, you know, if Fury gets him close, you know, does he need to sort of hold him and lean on him? He said, I get my fighters to fight on the inside, not hold on the inside. But he did say if you fight someone who's better than you on the inside, you are best off claiming them and resetting and going from there. But I mean, tactically, it's very interesting because when you have multifaceted guys like this, you don't know what they can do. When Fury, we've seen Fury box and move and being an absolute box of tricks, And then the second fight, he absolutely came out of the blocks charging at Deontay Wilder and ripped him to shreds, didn't he?
I've seen a suggestion, Triz, that maybe that style of fighting is not going to be good for Tyson Fury, and that, you know, his more elusive way of boxing, which was the way he was trained really earlier on in his career, is going to suit him better than the front foot power approach that he seems to have adopted latterly.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I suppose this is the thing. And when you get to fighters of this class, the trick is to be able to adapt, isn't it, Ian? Like, that's the show of someone who's really classy and who can do it all, is if plan A is not working, what's plan B and what's plan C? And that could be where the fight is won and lost.
And I do think Fury's pretty good at that. I mean, we always used to say that about Muhammad Ali. It was almost as if he was sitting at ringside watching the fight that he was in, and then he'd make an assessment and adapt accordingly, which is kind of what he did. I don't think Angela Dundee was expecting it, you know, in the jungle, you know, the rope-a-dope and all that kind of thing. He realized he couldn't dance around, not on his legs at that age anymore, and decided the best idea was to lay in the corner there and let Foreman tire himself out, then take him out. And it was the most audacious strategy anyone's ever come up with, I would say, in any sport, not just boxing, against the heavy hitter like Foreman. But it worked, and that was Ali. I do think Tyson Fury does have that quality. I do think he's got a great boxing brain, and it is entirely possible that he will find answers to anything Usyk has to offer. And I do think that adds to the mystique.
John, let me ask you this about legacy, and then Ian, I'll come to you with the same thing. So I was asked this week, you know, what does it mean for the legacy of whoever wins? And I think whoever wins has a very different legacy. I think things are different for Usyk if he wins, and things are different for Fury if he wins. And I think the reason I come to this conclusion is, if Usyk wins, he's beaten feasibly the top two heavyweights. Let's strike off Wilder now, who's lost a lot of momentum. And really, where else do you go with Usyk? Whereas if Fury wins, there's such a logical opponent in Joshua, his work is not done. John, what's your take on that?
Well, I think for a legacy and career perspective, I think this is probably bigger for Usyk. You know, I mean, if Usyk wins this, he'll be he's already a national hero, but it'll be just absolutely given superstardom in Ukraine for the rest of his days. It's a massively significant fight for him. For Tyson Fury, yeah, he wants, of course, to be viewed as being the number one. And as Ian said, he's always found a way. And thus far, he's proved that he is number one. And he goes into this fight very, very narrowly, from what I've seen earlier this week, as the betting favourite. But yeah, his career can go on, because there is the colossal fight against Anthony Joshua somewhere down the line. And even if Usyk shows that technically he's better and he gets the verdict against Fury, I don't think that hugely detracts from an AJ fight, because it would be a totally different sort of fight. And it's the massive British showdown, which, God willing, has to be surely in Britain.
I've said it 100 times before. I'm amazed this fight has not happened so far with the amount of money that would be involved. And I think, yeah, it's a win-win really for the people involved with Fury, because if he loses the fight, he can still have the AJ fight. It's still just as intriguing, really. It'd be more intriguing if Fury wins. I'll tell you one thing I hope, and I always used to think this in Vegas, I hope you don't get what is the commercially convenient decision. And Triss has talked about the possibility of it being close on the scorecards. Let's just hope that the guy who's actually won the fight gets the decision. And we're not talking about a, you know, the decision stinks type of scenario come Monday morning.
So, yeah, let me ask you this. So sometimes you get asked, who do you want to win? And I don't think that's a fair question for any of us, because we're impartial. But whose victory And obviously, we're hoping it's a great fight. That's the best scenario. But whose victory would be better for the health of boxing, John?
Well, for the health of the promotion, unquestionably Tyson Fury, because Fury is the biggest draw in the heavyweight division right now, a bigger draw than Usyk. And he would move on. So from a commercial perspective, I think there's no doubt at all that a Fury fight is the better result. Now, from a boxing purist's point of view, I'm not sure that that is the case. I think, you know, a lot of people who've been in the boxing world for a long time have got increasingly hacked off by some of the shenanigans in the build-up to fights and the bad language which is used and the social media way of trumpeting something that's coming up. And I think a lot of people have been massively impressed by the fact that Usyk has this amazing skill set, that he's come up from the cruiserweight division in the way that Evander Holyfield did, and that he's showed himself so far to be capable of fighting very effectively as a heavyweight. From an old purist point of view, I think the Usyk fight might be the better fight for boxing as a sport, but for boxing as a promotion and as something which puts bums on seats and sells tickets and puts on mega events, I think the Fury win quite definitely is the one that everybody who is trying to make money out of this, that's the one they want.
Yeah, it is. But I think something else will happen. If Usyk wins this, and he wins it convincingly, he becomes, I think, a much, much bigger global superstar. His status and profile goes absolutely through the roof. Obviously, he's extremely well regarded as things stand, but I think he goes, you know, sky high if he wins this fight and wins it well and takes Fury to school. But I'm interested, Chris, we haven't heard yet how you think the fight will develop.
It's not my show.
It is now.
I don't know. I've done this trainer round table for Boxing Scene that's going to go out, I think, late on Tuesday or early Wednesday. And I spoke to Shane McGuigan, Robert Garcia, and Teddy Atlas, and I'm no further forward. And some of the things they said were completely at cross purposes, and I respect all three. You know, Teddy said, you know, if you don't go to the body on Usyk, then you're not paying attention. And Shane McGuigan said, well, you know, you've got to think Fury's not a noted body puncher. Who's he stopped to the body before? Who's, you know, and Robert Garcia pointed out, if Fury is going to go to the body, which people think is an obvious attack, he's got to put himself in harm's way and give up his height and reach advantages to get in close to work the body. So three very differing points and analysis on the same topic, and the conversation really went in three different directions with all of them, so they couldn't really give me a steer. I don't look beyond that Ngannou fight, you know, I don't, because you know, whether Fury had or hadn't trained, you know, like you said, Ian, Ngannou was badly exposed in his next fight when he was decapitated by Joshua. And I just think, like I said near the start, you know, guys who are nearly 7 foot and 20 stone aren't surely at their physical peak at 35. And particularly after they've been through what they've been through in terms of Fury. And, you know, you can say about the hard living, but also he's climbed off the deck a few times, hasn't he? With Padgett, with Cunningham, countless times against Wilder, twice in the first fight and maybe another two or three times in that thrilling fight of the year, third fight. There's been, and he's been boxing since he was a young guy. I was going to say since he was small, but I don't think Tyson Fury's ever been small. But I think there's a cumulative mileage, and obviously this is all circumstantial evidence. There's no smoking gun there, unless I look at the Ngannou fight as the smoking gun. And it's a hunch that they're meeting at this crossroads where Fury's in decline and Usyk might just be at his very, very peak. And made for this moment. But then when you look at the logic and when you think of Fury at his best and flicking out that jab from halfway across the ring because he's so long, and the feints, and is Usyk going to be biting on the feints, you know, which Fury is so good with. You can really make a case for both. But I do get this hunch that that it could be Usyk's night. I do. And it is a hunch. It's one of those gut feelings, you know, and you get that around certain fights.
Triz, when do you think that Fury was at his best? Do you think his best performance was beating Klitschko?
No, I think it was the... It had to be the second Wilder fight, didn't it? Where he went out and just blitzed him.
When he goes onto the front foot and just shows that he's the bigger, stronger man and that he can outpunch the puncher.
Yeah, and I do wonder if that wouldn't be... You know, it's so hard against someone like Usyk, isn't it? But, you know, because you don't want to set off so quickly and then be fatigued and run out of gas halfway through the fight. But I do wonder if he shouldn't come out and really stamp his authority in Usyk and try to impose himself physically in the first round at least, to try and dictate a rhythm. And these guys are both fantastically rhythmic fighters. Once either of them get in a rhythm, it's going to be very, very hard for the other one to break it. It's tough. It's tough. But like I said, I've got this gut feeling about Usyk, and it's not really based on science or stats. It's just something within me that thinks that maybe it's passing of the torch time.
If what you say is right, though, Tris, there, and Fury is in decline, and then the Ngannou fight was a sign of that decline, then I don't think he's got much of a prayer with Usyk, because I don't think Usyk's going to be in decline. Not yet. Not the way he's kept himself. Not the way he is. I think if he's in decline, he gets beaten easily.
Yeah, I think, and by the way, I think it's easy to, it's worth pointing out here. I mean, let's face it. I mean, Usyk beat Daniel Dubois in Poland last year. He didn't look bulletproof himself, did he? But also, I think Usyk has boxed to the level of his opposition. He's pulled out those performances when it matters. And, you know, for want of sounding like a Teddy Atlas parrot, based on what Teddy said to me yesterday, I said to him, you know, what does Usyk need to do to be victorious? He said, well, his biggest attribute is that he is a winner. Like, he doesn't know anything else. Like, he's a born winner. And people think that's just talk and a nice line. But, you know, when someone is that focused on winning and that goal orientated, it's an attribute in its own right. And it kind of makes sense. It is a nice line. Don't get me wrong, but it does make sense. You know, the guy is an out and out winner, and you know, you can't take it.
Yeah, aren't they both out and out winners?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't think Fury's had the same tunnel vision over the years.
No, but I mean, that first fight against Wilder, I still am staggered that he got off the canvas in the last round and went on to get a draw when he probably should have been given a win. You know, I mean, if that is an amazing driven will to win, because I don't think any of us watching that fight thought that he was going to get up.
Well, is he in that same position now with several, you know, tens of million paydays afterwards? You know, does he still have that drive and hunger, or is he going to go to bed in Saudi Arabia tonight in silk pajamas?
That's what we're going to find out, isn't it? That's it. That's what makes it interesting, I think, this fight. I mean, that is a possibility, isn't it? It's one of the scenarios, but I don't know. I'm not sure Fury is going to be rough around the edges here. I think he knows how good the guy he's fighting is. I'm sure there are people listening to this, good boxing fans and hopefully regular listeners of our podcast, who are thinking, what are these three guys on about here? Fury's going to be too big for him. He's going to dominate the fight and he's going to win. I mean, that is a school of thought, isn't it? That it could pan out that way too.
So the odds have gone either way though, Ian. So from my understanding, Fury was a big favorite at the start. Then the Ngannou fight came and it narrowed up. And then I think once Ngannou got starched by Joshua, then there was more money on Usyk. And then for a brief period of time, Usyk was actually the betting favourite. So they've flipped. John, let me ask you this, just in terms of historical context and legacy. Are these two clearly one and two in the world? You know, when you factor your AJs, your Wilders, your Zile Zhangs and your Joseph Parkers, do you have these clearly one and two?
Well, I think you do on the basis of what you've seen. But there is, I guess there's maybe, if you're going to be super critical of Wilder, you know, to go out and lose as he did do in the fight following that and to look so washed up. You know, there is the argument, I guess, that that Fury made Wilder look more than he is. I think there is an argument on that. And would Wilder have been able to give Usyk the fight that he gave Fury? I mean, what do you reckon on that one?
Absolutely not. I think Wilder's got one of the worst skill sets I've ever seen from a leading heavyweight. He wouldn't have a prayer with Usyk. He'd box his ears off.
Yeah, so exactly. And I'd go along with that. And yet we had two fights. The third fight in particular, you know, I mean, Fury was in all sorts of trouble in that. Was it the fourth round where he was put down, where he took that colossal punch? You know, he was in massive trouble against Wilder. He came through and won it in a fabulous performance, and brilliant that he came back and took him out in the manner that he did. But my goodness, it was a rocky road to the victory line.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, Ian, you did say, I mean, we're asking all these questions, and that is the very sign of a great fight, isn't it? It's the jeopardy and it's the doubt. And, you know, we see a lot of mismatches in boxing. You'll know, Ian, obviously with your football work as well, like, you know, if Arsenal are playing Man City, you know, you want to watch it because you don't know what's going to happen. And I think that it's really important to frame it this way, in the sense that it's not far off a 50-50 fight. And maybe it even is going to be a 50-50 fight by the time the first bell goes. And this is what we want as fight fans. This is all we want, evenly matched 50-50 fights, right, John?
Yeah, and that's kind of the justification for the Saudi involvement. They've put the money up there. They've got rival promoters working together. They've been the architects of getting this fight on. And I think, although it's very easy, as Donald McRae has been and others in the run-up to this, to be enormously critical of the Saudi regime and a lot of what it stands for, the other side of it is that it is putting this fight on. And the fact that we're talking about it and getting excited about it as fight day approaches, is there any other way that this could have happened?
No, I mean, I think there's a lot of people saying that in boxing now, like it's the only way that this is going to happen. And, you know, Canelo Alvarez has named his price for the David Benavidez fight and said it's between $150 and $200 million. Like, well, if that's not a smoke signal out to Saudi Arabia, I don't know what is.
Yeah. And they might just buy it. I think they've shown that they are here to stay. And while the criticism of the Saudi regime will continue, I think they've shown very much that they are in boxing for the long term. And the fact that the big promoters are there alongside them, I think, underlines that fact.
Are they in boxing for the long term or sports washing for the long term?
That's a question you'd have to ask them, Ian, I guess. I think it's interesting. I mean, because it's all sport, isn't it? I mean, well, it's a lot of sport. There's snooker, there's the football, there's WWE wrestling, there's UFC, there's been tennis. Obviously, the golf has been huge. It is huge. It's such a big story in world sport. It's in many ways an underreported story, even though there has been some really good stuff written about it, but it is huge. And it's, you know, what's interesting as well, and I'm not sure we touched upon this, but, you know, Turki Alalshikh has got one show coming to Los Angeles on August 3rd, headed by Terence Crawford, and possibly a show in Wembley in September. So, you know, there's global expansion there as well. So, exciting times for the fight fans, but also people will understandably be will have a good deal of trepidation about it, given the, shall we say, motives behind it.
You're spot on.
Yeah, there's a
I couldn't put it better.
yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. And do you know
It's
what?
an
That
uncomfortable situation, isn't it? It is uncomfortable, but you know, us three sitting here talking about it, we can't change it. But there's that's another debate, as they say, but it's a very relevant debate.
The
Yeah, of
bottom
course.
line is money as it ever was. You know, people of the previous generation were very, very doubtful about the impact and the dominance that Las Vegas put on boxing. You know, the morals of Las Vegas, as we know only too well, are questionable, aren't they? And it was the money which came through which steered that. And Las Vegas and the American boxing scene no longer has the financial clout that it did 20 years ago. And so there's, to an extent, there's been a vacuum created, and for whatever reason, Saudi has come riding in with the answers financially.
And worth noting, there are people that absolutely couldn't care less as well. There are fight fans out there that just want these fights and want the best to fight the best, and they absolutely couldn't care less, and that's their prerogative. It's not everyone's stance on it, but there are, but it certainly exists where people just want, and maybe it's the same across all sports where they just want these superb, glamorous ties and fights and competitions. But still. I mean, that's a bit of a tangent. Like Ian said, not a wholly irrelevant tangent. I do want to get back to the fight itself. I suppose we better put our best feet forward and make a prediction here. Ian, let's start with you.
Oh,
Let's
thanks.
wrap it up in 60 seconds or less. Who are you going for and why?
I honestly don't know who's going to win the fight. You just go with a bit of a gut feeling. I think Usyk is a sweet scientist of an operator. He's a hard man who, as we've said, he's lived the life. And I think this is going to be a lot closer than a lot of people think. And do you know what? I think he might win this fight by split decision, or he might even win it late on, work rate, and in the end, dispirit Fury and break him up late on in the fight.
John, I'll just kick it over to you, but also I'll mention the word cuts. You know, Fury against Wallin and against Ngannou, like he shed blood, and there is scar tissue there. Usyk creates these angles and pot shots and works on the inside. Could be some head clashes. Cuts could play a part. It's worth referencing before I ask you, John, for your prediction.
Well, that certainly could be a factor, and yeah, and Tyson does cut, and you know, inside and outside the ring, and who knows how those previous injuries might open up as the fight progresses. I've talked to a lot of people around boxing and trainers, particularly in the run up to this, ever since it was first talked about as a fight which could happen. And I think that a lot of people within the sport, you know, I respect obviously people like Lennox. You've got to, haven't you? You say a good one always beats a good little one. But a lot of people in the sport think that Tyson may have peaked and that technically the Usyk is the better fighter and that he's come through in those fights against Joshua and that he's looked, you know, looked absolutely on top of his game when he's needed to. And I would absolutely go along with what Teddy Atlas told you, Triz, and that he is a winner, very much so, and has lived the life. And while in a lot of ways I'd love to see Tyson win this one, I think that Usyk is going to be a little bit of a nightmare for him. I think he's absolutely got the guts and the style that Tyson Fury doesn't need. And I think that this is going to go long, and I think that Usyk is going to take it on points.
And I'm going to go for the draw.
40-1.
Exactly. Why not? Why not? gents, it's been fun. So we'll do this again next week, and we will look at where we went wrong with our predictions and our breakdowns, and we'll eat humble pie together. But yes, it has been fun. It's always nice to get the band back together, and we will be watching with a great sense of anticipation and probably casting our minds back to where we were in 1999. By the way, were you both there in Las Vegas for Lewis Holyfield?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I was outraged like Ian.
Yeah, I mean, the New York one, as I think I said before, the New York Post headline the next morning, front page, not back page, was "It stinks." And that was the American reaction, you know.
Well, let's hope we don't get that.
Two great occasions.
Yeah, we don't want that.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Well, look, it's been nice to speak to you both and weigh up this huge undisputed heavyweight title fight, the first one in a quarter of a century. And we'll be back next week.
Hi, I'm John Rawling, welcoming you to Ringside Rewind, where I'm joined by Tris Dixon and Ian Dark. And we're grateful for sponsorship from Fleet UK, a car and commercial vehicle leasing company based in Hampshire, supporting our programme. Great people who've supplied customers for 20 years or more, including me. Wherever you are, they'll find and supply any car you want and work out financing options to best suit your needs. Fleet UK pride themselves on transparency, trust and fairness in every deal. And you can take it from me, they are brilliant at what they do. Just have a look and check them out at fleetuk.com.